This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. Kane Pittman and Olga Nulich with you to wrap up a ridiculous NBL Championship Series. The Tasmania Jack Jumpers get over the hump in year three of their NBL existence in a series that the last four games, only 7 points separated these two teams. Forget the game one blowout. The Jack Jumpers were able to bounce back and produce some absolutely magic basketball down the stretch. Olga Nulich was there for it all. We're going to get into what this means big picture and then try and break down what we saw in game five, because it was a crazy, crazy affair. Olgs, you were there. And, you know, watching from afar for me, certainly the Jack Jumpers had a crazy home advantage, but this venue, John Cain Arena, almost turned into not quite neutral, but I would say it felt like a 75-25 with the Jack Jumpers, the fans that were in the building. What was the experience like for you? You were out there with the confetti. You were talking to the players, the coaches, because the way this ended, joyous for Tasmania, heartbreaking for Melbourne.
Yeah, it's interesting. Usually, you don't really enjoy watching an opposing fan, but an opposing team celebrate a championship in front of a fan base that isn't theirs, right? Generally, that it has like a damper to it. It's a bit of a downer when you see something like that. This was maybe the exception, because there were so many Jack Jumpers fans. And I also think that even the Melbourne fans that stayed, there's like a general appreciation about what the Jack Jumpers have done, how they've gotten to this point. I know the sentiment has been that they're everyone's second favorite team. But I also think that even for Melbourne, there's just like an appreciation with regard to how the Jack Jumpers go about all of their processes, how they've gone about all these games. You just generally appreciate it. And so that moment was genuinely super exciting, and it was cool for everyone, not just the Jack Jumpers fans, but the United fans in there too. The United players, obviously extremely disappointed.
Yeah.
I think the nature of this series made it one of, if not the best we've ever seen, because every game was outside of game one was so close, because it came down to the last shot in like the last three games. And that deadly shot from where we were sitting, the power was good.
Sif.
You watched the replay, it was wide left, but man, it looked close. And so, look, I think everyone sort of, it was tough in the moment to appreciate the entire journey of the Jack Jumpers, but you can sort of feel it. You could feel that it meant more than just the Jack Jumpers winning a championship. You can tell the appreciation from everyone around them.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Daly half-court shot. So Jack McVay from half-court in game three wins the game. In game four, he has an almost identical look, isn't able to get it to knock it down. That would have been a walk-off championship shot. And Matthew Dellavedova had the same chance in game five. So just the three-game endings plus the wild ending to game two, with a little bit of controversy with the way that went down as well. The last four games couldn't have been any better. The last time we spoke was after game one, and we were wondering, you know, what that meant for the series. Ultimately, this Jack Jumpers team finishes the season with that one loss in game one, the only game they lost by double digits all season long. And we're going to get to Melbourne, because even if you say, okay, there's a healthy level of respect, I'm with you on that, there would be. But there's no question, this was the team that sat on top of the standings all season long. And they're going to be thinking about a lot of moments in this game and in this series, indeed, certainly from game five. So I want to break down the Melbourne perspective a little bit later, but we've got to make this all about the Jack Jumpers. So, you know, for me, I just discussed this on Nothing But Net. And I think big picture, when you look at the way this build has gone, because I think everyone looks at the Jack Jumpers and says, okay, well, this is a three-year franchise. This is new. I know you did the interview with Dave Stevenson. He's like, well, this is the greatest startup franchise in the history of the universe. In Australian sports, I believe you said. But this has been calculated from day one of the Jack Jumpers. And I think if you look at the way that they've tweaked year in, year out and tried to figure out how they can win, it does say a lot about this league and the way teams build. And there was a change in the offseason from this Jack Jumpers team, that they understood that they'd been close and they knew that the formula was there. You play defense, you have continuity with your roster, particularly with the role player guys, and you just tweak around the edges and you say, okay, what's the right mix with the imports? And it was very clear for this team that they needed more offense. And they didn't necessarily need a number one scorer or someone that was going to take over every single game, but they just needed someone that could tick over the scoreboard when things got mucked up, when things got difficult, when the offense wasn't able to function in the half court like they wanted it to. And Jordan Crawford was the guy. I think Majuk Dang had some big moments in this series. Anthony Drimmick has been important all season long. But Jordan Crawford was the guy, because I think over the balance of the whole postseason, he hasn't had a great playoffs. He's been up and down.
Yeah.
He did exactly what they needed him to do. In game two, when he scores those 13 points in the first quarter, the Jack Jumpers end up winning a close one, and they needed every bit of that to start the game when they're in trouble. In this half, again, you're in the building game five. The 27 points in what was really not a good offensive half, and it was all just Jordan Crawford just getting it done by himself. And so I think they came in with the idea, what do we need to get over the hump? They had the right idea, and the fact that it came perfectly at the biggest moments you could possibly imagine, I just think this has to be so satisfying for the Jack Jumpers, Scott Roth, everyone. How you build a roster, how you tweak year in, year out, but you make sure you keep the foundations of what makes you successful in the NBL.
Yeah, so foundation is Jack McVay, Will Magnay, Sean McDonald, Clint Steindl, Jared Bairstow. These are all guys, especially those first four, who you knew that they were going to come in and set the identity of this team from day one. They knew that that is the most sustainable way to build a franchise and ultimately lead to success. We spoke about it all season, and I'm surprised you're not gloating more, because you had the Jack Jumpers for the majority of, if not the entire season. But having that as your foundation raises your floor in such a significant way. And then it's just about those little pieces. Like you said, the Jordan Crawfords, the Majuk Dangs, these little bits and pieces that then lift your ceiling a little bit, that your floor is already here, but to get you over the line, who are those guys who can come in and give you that spark, that little bit of impact to ultimately get you over the line? But as much as those guys exist and they're super important, and Jordan Crawford especially was important in that game five, 27 in the first half, it was, if I'm Melbourne, it is sickening.
Yeah.
The fact that he decided to choose that game to pop off, right? I think we only saw that one other time this season, which was against Sydney, where he just was unstoppable.
Yeah.
But as much as those guys are super important, Crawford's super important, the foundation was so important. And they have set the guide for how to begin an NBL franchise. And there's an easy comparison between them and the Phoenix, right? The Jack Jumpers focused on culture from day one, and they focused on identity from day one. Seemed like the Phoenix, on the other hand, just try to get talent. They just try to get the most, the highest perceived talent, throw as much money as you can and see if that works. That just doesn't work, though. You need to have someone like Scott Roth, who is a figurehead. You have to understand your community in the way that Scott Roth and that Jack Jumpers team does. And you have to have a foundation of guys who are going to be the foundation of what you're about going forward. And it hasn't just been for those 3 years. That core of McDonald, McVay, Magnay, and Doyle, I think, as well, that's the foundation of this team for, I think, in their minds, the next few seasons. And so if their floor is the top four, all they need to do is every season work on those little bits and pieces, and they're a top two team every single season.
Yeah, I totally agree. The other points in terms of the roster tweaks of why this team got better, and we've had a lot of fun talking about this team all season long, because me and you have been getting stuck into it, but the reason why, first of all, we all make predictions, whatever. Preseason, my prediction was Sydney Kings to win the title. They didn't even make the playoffs. So,
true.
But it was what you saw very, very early in the season that I just felt was going to be sustainable. Now, you still needed things to work out. Like Jack McVay, go back to year one, he found like he found a spot that all of a sudden he knew he was required, he knew he was wanted, and so he became an emerging possible star in that first year. He had a pretty good year. The second year, it's like, okay, is this guy the most improved player, and where is actually the ceiling for him? And then this year, he becomes this guy that is all NBL and a genuine star of the league now, that you know, you wonder where the future is for him. Does he stay in the NBL and just be a dominant player year in, year out, and a clutch player that can step up in the big moments? Who knows what the future holds for him? He's still young enough that he can go overseas, he can do whatever he wants to do. So all those things had to work. And the other player that we discussed so much throughout the season was Will Magne. And he was kind of just hanging in the background, trying to get healthy over the last few seasons. And this year, they perfectly managed him, because we discussed it all year long. If the Jack Jumpers are going to win, he's going to have to play 20-plus minutes. He's going to be able to be pushing 30 minutes come the postseason. Now, he didn't have a great championship series either, and his minutes were down. There was some foul trouble there. But I thought in Game 5, you saw the difference he could make, because Marcus Lee was out, another key addition for this team. And Magne was banged up, and he was limping up and down the floor the whole entire night. But in the fourth quarter, he was coming up with big blocks. He got big baskets, and he just became a monstrous presence on the floor. So he was another factor of this. So it just goes to show, when we discuss all this with the Jack Jumpers, how much actually needs to come right at the right time to win. And this is even a series that you only win, as we said, the last four games by plus 7 points in four games. So a lot of it had to be perfect, but they put themselves in the position for that to be the case. And I think if we continue to look big picture, you know, I think about the teams that have been successful for a long time in the NBL, and generally what stands out about those teams, Melbourne United with Dean Vickerman, so a stable leader and a stable idea of how you're going to build the roster. And for Melbourne United, it has been based around those local players that we discussed. And they got away from that a little bit last year through no fault of their own. They got back to that this year, and you bring in JLA, you bring in Dellavedova, and all of a sudden they were a dominant force again. Perth Wildcats back in the day with Trevor Gleeson. And the Sydney Kings are the example of a team that, when you lose that and you have to change over your roster, you can have as much talent as you want, but history tells us in the NBL, you win by having the foundation of a program that has consistency year in, year out. So that's why I agree with you that as long as Scott Roth is there, and as long as the Tassie Jack Jumpers have the core pieces that we think they're going to have, and they have a history of being able to show local guys and everyone, hey, come to us, because we're a team that wins, and we're a team that is going to grow you and develop you. They're in a tremendous spot. And that takes patience. And I think the Jack Jumpers, despite the fact they straight away went to the top in a grand final, I think they had patience with the way that they wanted to build this thing. It's just worked out a lot faster than, you know, maybe even they imagined possible.
And I think that's why the Jack Jumpers, they're becoming sort of a destination now for some guys, because anyone who leaves that program and anyone who's within that program, if you ask them, their perception of it is really, really positive. And so if you're a free agent, or if you're someone who's about to become a free agent, the Jack Jumpers are right there, because they're not just a team that obviously has a community that cares deeply about them and has one of the best, if not the best, coach in the league. But it's also what... Roth does, as far as so many coaches around the league have, you know, their minutes set out going into games, and they don't ever veer away from it. That is far too common in the NBL. Roth isn't like that. If you are playing well, Roth will play you. If Roth sees an opportunity for you to go in and create advantages, he will continue to play you. And I think that is something different that he does. Like, he believes in his guys, and I think anyone who's within that program understands that and has a genuine respect for that. And then you talk about those big moments that the Jack Jumpers came up in. That's what was so crazy about this series, that United led for most of it. They obviously won game one big. They had a 15-point lead in game two. They had a lead in game three. They had a 9-point lead with 8 minutes to go in game five, right? They were the better team for the majority of the series. But the Jack Jumpers just have this knack, and it's because of the foundation that we've spoken about, of just hanging around. Whenever there was a big three to be made, Fabian Krstljevic would hit one in the corner. Anthony Drimmick would hit a big shot. The development of Sean McDonald since he got to Tasmania has been incredible, for him to go from a DP to someone who was maybe the preferred point guard closing out games. That is an incredible leap that he's made. But this team was just able to stay in games. And then you just have trust in Milton Doyle and Jack McVeigh, and in Will Magne on the defensive end, and even Sean McDonald and these guys to make plays at the end of games and to ultimately get you over the line. And that's in a season like this, in a series like what we just saw, that's really what it came down to, just these guys coming up big in the biggest moments.
It's interesting you bring up the idea of whether it is just changing up the rotation or within a series that goes five games, making the adjustments and feeling out lineups, because there was a real contrast with the way these two teams worked their way through the series. The Jack Jumpers, I think, had three or four different starting lineups just within the five games. Melbourne United was steady. Their rotation didn't change. And even though it was so tight, you could forgive Scott Roth for just saying, well, we're just going to start these guys. We're going to ride it out. But he didn't. He constantly made changes, and he always seemed to tap the right box at the right time. What did you think when Fab Krizlovich was starting game four? Because I know we've discussed this a number of times before, and it's nothing against Krizlovich. He's been an unbelievably solid player for this team over their 3 years. But you know, to me, at that point in time where you were looking to close out the series, I couldn't believe it. But he is a genius, and he makes these decisions, and he knows which lever to pull with all these guys and what they might respond to. And, you know, overall, in Game 5, he goes back to Magne in the end. But when you're looking at the coaching moves throughout, it felt like Scott Roth won this pretty comfortably, and he wasn't afraid to make adjustments on the fly and change those lineups and change the rotations or look for different ways to try and not just get the edge in terms of the total 40 minutes, but it felt to me like he always kept Melbourne thinking as well. They didn't know what was going to come next in terms of what he was going to do within a game.
Yeah, the game four, so starting Krizlovich, maybe there was an element of saving Magne, protecting him from foul trouble potentially. Maybe he thought it was a better matchup with Joe Lollichul Jr. to start that game. There was a sort of a whisper that Magne was maybe dealing with a foot or leg issue throughout a lot of the series. He obviously had, I think, a hamstring tweak in game five, and he told me after the game that if he pushed too hard, he thought it was going to pop.
Can I just say, in of all the injuries that Will Magnay's had, and then to get to game five, and I think it was JLA steps on his shoe comes off, so then he slips on his sock and hurts his hamstring. Like, out of everything this guy has gone through, when I was watching that happen in the moment,
in the first few minutes,
I was like, this is devastating for not just for Tassie, for Will specifically. And I don't know how he did it. I don't know how damaged it was, but he did not look comfortable, but he was still able to push through. It just would have been a horrific moment for everything he's been through.
Yes, and especially now that we look at it, how big he came up in the fourth quarter on both ends of the floor. But game four, we saw Krizlovich had, I think, 3 3-point attempts in the first like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Missed all of them, but they were wide open. And so maybe Scott Roth knew that he was going to get those looks, and he has trust in Krizlovich to knock them down. And he knocked down a really big one in game five. The chess match of the small ball was super interesting. Obviously, we saw that in game three, Majuk Deng started the fourth quarter at the four, and then they moved him up to the five, and you saw Dean Vickerman sort of hesitate before he tried to match it and put Carl Bowen on at the five. So I thought that was super interesting. And then in game five, he starts Sean McDonald over Anthony Drivic. Now, we've just spoken about these coaches who just rely on what they have, right? They rely on the familiar. This Tasmania Jack Jumpers team was the team that was the least injured throughout the season. They had the same starting lineup practically for the entire regular season, because it was Jordan Crawford, Milton Doyle, Drinick, McVeigh, Lee, right? And there was that little stretch where Milton Doyle went home, then he came back, and so that was their lineup. And so to change the starting lineup this many times, granted injury did play a part in some of it, in one series, I think points to something interesting. That Scott Roth is, I think, the oldest coach in the league, but he's the most open to being progressive and making change and adjusting on the fly and adjusting his thought processes to new evidence. And I find that really, really intriguing. And Dean Vickerman spoke after the game that Scott Roth kept them thinking. Like, they would have coaches meetings within United, and the sort of the different wrinkles that Scott Roth would throw at them, whether it's the different play calls that they'd have coming out of timeouts or the lineups, it kept United thinking. And so This was a really fun chess match to watch. These are the two best coaches in the league, and I think this series showed it.
No question. One thing that I was considering over the last couple of days, and as the longer this series played out, I wanted to run by you. So I know we discussed a lot earlier in the season, the fact that the Jack Jumpers won that game at John Cain Arena where they were dead and buried, and they closed it out late in the fourth quarter and they picked up that early road win. And you already mentioned how many times this team was down and out. And it even goes back to the fact that they got blown out in game one. Now, this is a very Scott Roth team thing that we've seen over the last 3 years. They don't get rattled. They don't get shaken. They're able to bounce back. But I do wonder, on the other side, on Melbourne, what impact it played and whether that game early in the season, in terms of memories of, okay, this team can do this. And then they do it in game two and they come back from 15 points down. And even in this game five, when it's on Melbourne's home floor, and I know being on the road hasn't troubled Tasmania, particularly in that building this season, across the course of the season. But you know, when you're up 9, relatively late in the third quarter, and the Jack Jumpers called timeout, and Scott Roth looks like he's not even sweating. He couldn't be any more relaxed about the whole entire situation. There was a confidence and a level of calm with this team right throughout the season and right throughout this series that it didn't matter how big the lead was. It didn't matter if the season was on the line or they were on the road or everything was there. I do wonder whether that win earlier in the season proved pretty pivotal, not just for Tassie, but perhaps even for Melbourne, knowing that they'd done it before. They'd seen that. They felt that early in the season and they carried it right through to the championship series.
Yeah, I reckon both teams would deny it if you asked them.
I think so.
But it would definitely be a little nugget in the back of all of their heads, in the Jack Jumpers' heads of, oh, we've done this before. Like, we've come back and we've come up big in the big moments and beaten this team on their floor before. And United, again, maybe a little glimmer in the back of their eye of, oh no, like this team doesn't go away. You thought that maybe the team that could overcome that would be this United team because of the guys that they have, because of the experience, the veterans they have. They've been in these moments before. And that goes from Daly, Shay Ealy, Chris Golding, to Luke Travers, to Joe Louachel Jr., to Ian Clark. They've been on bigger stages than this, or the biggest stages in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you think maybe it wouldn't faze them, but and for all we know, it didn't. But that's just what this Jack Jumpers team was. It was, and I think that's what makes this even more sickening for United. The fact that they did almost everything right. They were probably perfect in their execution and processes for like 85% of this series. But just that 15% is the difference between winning a title and not winning a title. And I thought about last season. I spoke to some New Zealand Breakers people over the course of the season on, imagine they were up like 6 points with 4 or 5 minutes to go. And the Kings came away and won that series in game five. It's something that just doesn't leave you. Being so close to winning a title and then just not being able to get over the line because of what ultimately came down to maybe 2 or 3 plays over the course of the entire series, which is crazy to think about. And then I did feel bad at the end for Brad Newley. That's probably the thing that makes me the saddest for United. The fact that he finished his career without a domestic title. I saw him after the game. He was obviously sad about it. Chris Golding, his really good friend, was sad that he wasn't able to play a part in giving Brad Newley his first domestic title. And so that was sad for United. But yeah, look, it's crazy that this entire season, for all of its ups and downs, for all of its volatility, came down to 3 or 4 moments that ultimately decided the season.
And in the end, it was Jack McVay hitting a half-court buzzer beater. Now, I know there was still plenty more basketball to play out after that moment, but that's still... I'm happy to defer to Andrew Gaze when he says that this is potentially, possibly, or is the greatest shot in NBL history. And now that they've gone on to win, that is going to be a shot that the story will be told forever, and it's only going to become greater because they went on to win the series. If he had gone and hit that one back-to-back walk-off half-court threes in game four, I mean, I said it last week on one of our shows, but they said that would be the greatest 2 back-to-back game winners in not just the NBL, the history of basketball. I don't know the history of basketball, so I'm completely making that up, but it feels that way. But Jack McVay, as I said earlier in the podcast, the way he's been able to build to now get to this moment. And I think we've seen over the last few years, he's pretty continuously built his ability to be a big game player and a big shot maker. We've seen it time and time again. But this is next level for him. You spoke to him soon after the final buzzer went. But it really does make me wonder what might be next or what he can get to, because the improvement since he got here, yes, I think it's the environment. I think Scott Roth is a big part of that. But Jack Maffei doesn't hide a lot of things. We see what he's thinking about and what he's doing on social media and all those two things. I think the growth of him is one of the great stories in the NBL over the last few seasons. And he got better and better even within this season. Around halfway through the year, we discussed, is all NBL in the mix, or where does he sit? Is he the best player on this team? And even halfway through the year, I was like, maybe, but Milton Doyle's there. And even though I was high on this team and we've discussed all the reasons for that, if you told me that Milton Doyle had the series that he had and the Jack Jumpers would still win, I'd say, well, there's no chance. But it was because Jack Maffei was consistently keeping things ticking along for this team, and he became the best player on the floor in an NBL championship series. Not sure you would have believed that 3 years ago, Alex.
Nah. He's like a really good example of, obviously, hard work and dedication to your craft and all that sort of stuff, but also just holding out for an opportunity. He got DNPs in that final season in Adelaide, and people were crying out for him to play. They knew that there was a skill set there and it was something that was conducive to the modern game, and it could be really effective in the NBL, but he just didn't get minutes. He got to Tasmania, and he became a focal point of what this team was going to be about. And like you said, the growth, not just over the season, but over his three seasons, but over this season. During the Blitz, I interviewed Jack, and he said that this season is the most confident he's ever been, because he went to go and play in Europe prior to this season, or after last season. And so he came in, he said, I feel like an import. And that's what he was this season. That's what he looked like. Now, I don't know what the next step for him is. He's obviously contracted with the Jack Jumpers next season. NBA sort of things are being thrown around. I don't know how his game translates to the league. Obviously, people look at his limitations a lot, and maybe that's on us to not do. People talk about his lack of athleticism and all that sort of thing, which is a legitimate concern, but he's so skilled in every other area. Again, whether the NBA is in his future, I don't know. You'd probably bet on, probably not. He's 27, 28. It's a difficult step to make at this point in his career. What I think is, quite imminent for him is a Boomers consideration. I'd be unbelievably surprised if he doesn't go to camp. I think he will go to camp in June, and then we'll see what happens. We've spoken, and I feel like we've spoken about this before. The Boomers have needed a shooter, right? And we always think, all right, Chris Golding, and then, who's the next shooter? And Vasiljevic is always the name that gets brought up, but it's probably McVay, right? If you're going to have someone out there who's going to be an absolute knockdown, no-leave shooter, McVay has size. He's got other parts of his game as well that I think are conducive to the FIBA game, and him as a spot-up shooter is one of the best in the league, outside of, your Chris Goldings and maybe Ian Clark and Bryce Cotton on his day and some of these guys. Jack McVay is up there as the best shooter in Australian basketball, so I like that he's grown to the point where he's legitimately in those talks, not just as a camp guy, because that almost feels like a little token appreciation, but I think he's in legitimate consideration to go to Paris.
It would be fascinating. And positionally, I think it's a little bit different with Chris Golding, DJ, than probably Jack Maffei. So I guess it depends, what those lineups look like. A little bit more size, probably play at the four-ish, and then you can play some small ball. We've seen that. We know that Brian Gorgeon wants to play at pace, but I would agree. I mean, he's if you win the NBL Grand Final MVP and have the season he had, I mean, he's going to be in the squad. I mean, I would be stunned if he wasn't. And then we'll see where it goes from there. But he's continued to improve. I don't see any reason to believe that he wouldn't continue to improve as the years go on. You mentioned Chris Golding, though. Let's turn our attention to Melbourne a little bit here as we continue the chat here. And the fallout from the championship series. So Chris Golding was one of what felt like a handful of players that were really hampered as well. And I don't think you can tell the story of this game five without suggesting or bringing up the idea that it looked like Melbourne were absolutely limping to the finish line. And it looked like there were a number of guys that were feeling, whether it was just the fatigue or some sort of injury. Do you know how bad that got with some of those guys? Because we know, and we've discussed, the schedule for the series is a little funny, and you know, I get it. You want to have games closer to the weekend, and you don't want to be playing midweek games and Monday games, all those types of things. But to have a long gap between the first game and then the second game, and then you have game four and game five only a couple of days in between. When a couple of guys started to look really sore in that game four, it did at least swing the, it tilt the scales in favor of the Jack Jumpers a little bit. It certainly felt like that.
Yeah, going into game four, so I was told that in game three, Golding got like a corky in his calf. And so then he carried that into game four. We knew immediately because he was wearing those long skins on both legs. And Chris Golding hates wearing long skins. And so if that's what he had to resort to in order to feel as though he was the most prepared to play, then you know that there is something up there. And you could tell the way he was limping. It barely affected his game, which is another story, right? He's just an incredible shot maker. I'm not sure I've seen a better shot maker in the NBL. Yeah, it's insane. But he was dealing with that, and then obviously dealing with that in game five as well. That was somewhat concerning because he's dealt with calf issues before. And while this wasn't like a strain, a corky can lead to something else that can ultimately lead to a strain. And so it was something that they had to be really, really cautious of. I think the thing that affected Golding more in game five was the foul trouble. And that affected JLA being on the floor as well. And the thing is, the series was called largely pretty well, I think. There were moments here and there that I thought were terrible as far as officiating, but generally I thought that the sentiment the refs went in was largely fine. And so, yeah, I think the foul trouble hampered them more. But yeah, if you're Melbourne, and I'm wondering what you think, because I asked Dean Bickerman about this, in that it came down to like three shots that ultimately ended their season. They had otherwise a great season, one that if you could do it all again and have 5 minutes of different moments again, they'd probably win a championship, obviously. And so going into next season or going into this offseason where they've got to make some decisions, do you just try to emulate the same thing? Because for all intents and purposes, it worked.
Yeah, I don't think they need to change too much. I said, yeah, right from the start of the season, I was concerned about the three-point shooting. I do think that was a problem. Now, I know that they had guys that were able to knock him down, and you know, Travis hit a couple threes in this series. Daly was obviously super aggressive as a scorer, almost as aggressive as we've seen him. I mean, he had an unbelievable series. It would have been nice, but ultimately, you had a team that was top two in offense and top two in defense, and it took what we saw to beat them. So I would totally agree. They would regret different moments in the series. There's probably nothing they would regret more as a team and individually, or maybe be thinking about, than the turnover at the end of game three, which allowed the half-court shot. I mean, that's just an absolutely wild sequence. And I know we nearly saw it again in game four going the other way, but I mean, that's the type of thing that in a series like this, if they win that game, they've got two cracks at closing it out, they probably get it done. And it's just a wild sequence. So there will be, I'm sure, a lot of them thinking, well, we were unlucky, and they were. But in that game five, as you discussed, I mean, Chris Golding was +7 in his 27 minutes. He was incredibly frustrated with Jordan Crawford drawing his third foul on him late in the first half. That was a big moment in the game. And JLA for mine, that was the real tough one, because we wrote in our column headline or storyline after game one, yo, is JLA going to be the grand final MVP if Melbourne win it? And I said yes, and I still feel strongly about that, because if you look at the way the rest of the series went from there, he only averaged 9 points across game two, three, and four. He wasn't a dominant force. He was frustrated by that foul trouble. And then I thought in game five, he did get up to 21 minutes, still not enough for him. He needed to play more. Foul trouble early was a problem with his three fouls in the first quarter, and then that changed the way that he played the game. He still finished with 14 points and 6 rebounds in that game, and the teams, he was a plus minus of 0, so they didn't lose those minutes. I know it was a very close game. But to me, that is the biggest factor. JLA's inability to dominate this series, and I know it was an important matchup with Will Magne, but to me, he had to be that guy, because we saw in game one when he could be that guy, that there wasn't much Tassie could do about it. And unfortunately for him, some of it, you know, in his control, some of it not. That is the biggest reason to me why Melbourne lost, because JLA didn't come out a dominant player in the series. In fact, he had a bad series.
Yeah, outside of game one, I thought he was almost negligible, right? He had little moments here and there. And I thought in game five, he had some really good moments, especially to start the game. But yeah, the inability to sustain that over the course of a game. If you want to be one of the elite big men in the NBL, which he is, right?
You got to be on the floor, Oggs. That was the biggest factor. Even when he was on there, it wasn't that. It was he couldn't stay on the floor.
Yeah, and I thought game five was really clear. You could see a clear difference between him and Will Magne. Will Magne was hobbled as hell, but he came up with some extremely clutch and impressive defensive plays. There was a block on Luke Travers, his rim protection, and then I think he backed down JLA basically all the way under the basket, rose up and finished over him. He made some big plays, I think, in game two as well, where I think JLA had it on the block. I think Magne saw that JLA was probably going to put on the floor, got into space and drew the charge there. I thought Magne came up big it's the story of the whole series. It doesn't matter how good you are for the majority of the series. If you don't come up big when it matters, then you're like largely useless, right? And credit to JLA, who came up really big in game four with that steal off the inbounds. That was a huge play. One of the big, if Melbourne won that series, that was one of the plays of the series. But I think more often than not, it was the Jack Jumpers overall, but especially the Jack Jumpers bigs who made the plays when needed down the stretch.
The one other guy I think we should mention here, because, yeah, we referenced Jack Buffet with Boomer stuff, and, you know, I think Daly had a great season. And I think he had a great series. Again, I think fatigue got him a little bit in game five. That's just what I thought I was seeing. There's a really pivotal stretch in the fourth quarter where he was on the bench and he wasn't able to get on the floor. And I don't think Melbourne could afford to have him off. So I wonder if there would have been a way to get him back on the floor a little bit. In the end, it's only a 2-point game. He was just 4 for 15. Again, there might have been some legs there, because there was games where he looked like he could hardly breathe on the floor down the stretch. We've seen him do that before, and you know he's going to leave everything out there. But, I mean, there's no question for me. I mean, this season was significantly better than his first season in the NBL. He spoke a lot about the preparation coming in. The first year when he played at Melbourne, he hadn't played a lot of basketball leading into that. So it shouldn't be a surprise that he played better basketball, but, you know, here I like the fact that he hasn't hidden his intentions of what he wants to do, and he said Paris there. Again, is going to be another guy that's going to be there for the Boomers, but yeah, he was their best player in the championship series. There's not a lot more you could do than he did in this series to put his hand up or to press his claims for what could happen down the road.
Yeah. Before I talk about it, I want to pose a question to you that someone asked me right after Game 5 finished. If United won and the way to vote for a championship series MVP was just you put your vote in, who would have been a championship series MVP from United?
Daly. Because I think that... Okay. I think, you know, Chris Golding is probably the other guy that was right there. And he's... shooting at times in this series was outrageous. I thought Daly on both ends, and I know that there was, you know, some issues defensively throughout this series, but I thought just his typical Daly stuff of diving on the floor, just willing himself to every single ball, taking big shots and hitting big shots throughout the series. I thought his end to game five, his last minute and a half in that game four, his last minute and a half in that game was just extraordinary. So with some of the shot making, getting that loose ball off the floor. For me, I think influence wise, impact wise, it was going to be Daly or McVay, whichever game this went. Where did you fall?
I also had Daly, but I spoke to some people where the response was mixed between Daly and Golding. But yeah. I wanted people to back up my thought that I think it was Daly. And I think a large part of that, when we talk about Daly, and I think maybe he was overly assertive in that game five, trying to maybe forcing shots. He was maybe 4 of 15, 4 of 14 from the field. I think he forced a lot of shots, but I think he was getting to his spots. He did that throughout the series. He has this really cool knack of getting in the lane and using his physicality. He's so strong. When you see him up close, He's so dense. And you can see that's the way he plays too, right? And the shot doesn't look great. I was watching, I think it was ahead of game one, I was with Andrew Gaze and Derek Rucker. We're watching Dele warm up, and I could just hear like groans from around me because the shot doesn't look amazing, right? Hey. It's funky. It's super quick, but it went in. I think he shot it super well over the course of the series.
Yeah.
I think the main thing that Dele did this series was there's a reason why we haven't really spoken about Milton Doyle, and Milton Doyle is Jack Jumper's best player, and I think that's still the case. He is their best player. I still think he is their closer. He hit huge shots, including a three in game three. He hit that floater that basically sealed the win in game five. Milton Doyle is their best player, and Dele effectively shut him down for the majority of the season. The work rate that Dele had to put in order to stay in front of Milton Doyle, to guide him to the spaces where United wanted him to go, and to force him into really, really tough looks all the time, that was largely on Matthew Dellavedova. And so it is a credit to him that United was able to contain the best player on the other team.
Yeah, Milton Doyle's high scoring game in the series was game one, where he had 16 points. And again, it comes back to the roster construction, the timeliness of Jordan Crawford having scoring outbursts, and the consistency of Jack McVeigh, and then Will Magne, the two-way play, and the role players that came in and hit shots as well. So that's what allowed them to win. You mentioned the floater down the stretch. Doyle had 6 points out of his 11 in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. So again, ultimately, when it got down to the fourth quarter, the closer was able to close. Even though he didn't score his first points till I believe it was early in the third quarter, but he was able to get the shots down the stretch. But no, it's a great point you make on Dele there as well, the defensive stuff. So that's all additive. That's why I think he would have been my grand final MVP in that situation. But ultimately, I don't know. I mean, this was a series, and even within the games, where I didn't know what was going to happen next. And every time that I thought I knew a path that it was going down, like if you had have asked me when Melbourne were up 9, even though we had all the evidence to suggest that Tasmania were going to get back into the game, if I looked ahead and I pictured what podcast we would be doing, I figured that we'd be starting with Melbourne and talking about the Jack Jumpers just missing out again and what went wrong. And it would have been, well, Milton Doyle didn't have the series he had. And we would have flipped some of these conversations we're having. That's probably why Melbourne, as we said, feel a little bit unlucky after this. But it doesn't get much better. I thought last year's grand final series was pretty good, but this was significantly more drama-filled, the bigger moments, and the fans as well. You know, I think the fans matter, and I think the games from Tassie to Melbourne, I thought it was really fun atmosphere coming through the TV. So I've said it before, I was jealous I wasn't there, but what are some of the final thoughts you have then on this series, or any stories or any background stuff we need to know from someone that was behind the scenes?
Firstly, so I was able to go to Hobart for games 2 and 4. It is a really enjoyable place to be. It is loud. Obviously, it's loud. But it's also like they just care a lot. It's the fan base that I think they feel as though they're a part of the team more than any other fan base feels they're a part of their team. And I think it's really clear. They're really lovely. All the people around the stadium, it's almost as though they're, and it sounds almost patronizing, but they're really just happy to be there. But it's more like they finally have a team. I think that's what it is. They finally have a team. So it's like, this is our only pro team, practically. We're just going to put all of our effort and all of our enthusiasm into it. And you can feel it in the building. So I thought that was super interesting. And the thing that I like is I never care who wins titles. I really don't care. My bias is toward the fact that the Grand Championship Series was in Hobart instead of Perth. It's a shorter flight for me, right? Selfishly, it's more comfortable to do that. If Perth is in it, I get to go see Bryce Cotton, right? It's cool, right? Either one is palatable for me. That's whatever. The thing that I do like about Tasmania winning was that it sort of validates the idea that this is how you build a roster. You can't just pay your way into a championship all the time. You can't just pretend your way into a championship. They built this from the ground up, right? Even the Sydney Kings, over the past few seasons, sure, they spent some money and they have really incredible talent, but there was also a foundation that they had. right, of their bench guys, of Xavier Cooks, of Vasiljevic. These guys are foundation that they set, and they grew with it, and they won a championship because of it. That's what I think United had as well, with Dean Vickerman and Shea Ely and Chris Golding and all these guys.
Yep.
And I think the Tasmania had that to a T, where the start of their three-year process began. They got these guys, McVeigh, Magnay, McDonald, and they just grew with them. They raised these guys into championship level players. And I would like for every other team to look at that mold, look at how they built that team, and use that as a guide going forward when you're building teams in the future.
Some of it was the limitations of, you know, a new franchise, and at the time, the perception of being in Tasmania, all those things. So some of it was limited by that in terms of their initial roster, but even the imports they got, when you think back to them, and, you know, Josh Majette ended up being such a perfect player to help build a program and be organized and have an offense that you can run in the half court. In the end, they decided they needed a different type of player, which helped them get over the hump. But the way they tried from the start, like I said, I think this was a patient beginning to the franchise. They just got there way faster than anyone else. And I think that now that's why we are seeing other teams like a Brisbane with Justin Schuller, and like an Adelaide who's just trying to get some semblance of stability moving forward as well. Because I do think that the other teams do see it. It's just that not everyone can pull it off. And that's why I think the Tassie Jack Jumpers should be so proud of the people that they've got together, and they've done a great job. And ultimately, the players are a big part of it. But Scott Roth is just an absolutely genius hire. And he, you know, obviously is an absolute hero down in Tassie. But I think ultimately, that's why everyone, you spoke about people, whether it is Tassie, their second favorite team. The one thing I'll say, once you start winning titles, that goes away, because then people get really sick of you. So there are going to be some people that start to turn on Tassie now. But Scott Roth, I think the approval rating is through the roof for him, and happy for him, man. I'm happy for him. I was, you know, predictions aside, the bragging rights over you, I don't care about it. Yes, I was happy for these people, man. You said it. They're nice. They deserved it. They'd been there a couple of times, and he's a feel good champion.
Yeah, and I'll finish on this. Going into next season, Milton Doyle, Sean McDonald, Jet McVeigh, Will Magnay, Clint Steindl, all these guys are signed. The core that just won the championship is signed. And so whether they bring back Jordan Crawford or not, I don't know. They'll be in the McDowell-White sweepstakes. Add him to this group. If you talk about an organized team, like, do they get more organized with him there? Is he more consistent than Crawford? I'm unsure if Marcus Lee will be back. I don't think he will be. But if you fill those two spots, and those two guys, Marcus Lee didn't play in the last few games. Jordan Crawford has been up and down. Obviously, he came up huge in game five. But the core of this championship team is there. So we'll see what other teams do. Obviously, the Kings are retooling with Gorge and Xavier Cooks. And Melbourne still has Shea Ely, Chris Golding, Matthew Dellavedova. Luke Travers, if he doesn't go to the NBA. A lot of these guys are signed. JLA has a player option. We could still have these two teams back here next season, because the core of both of them are there, including the core of this Tassie team, one more year advanced in their development. They may already be the early favorite for next year's title.
We love it. And the beauty is, you don't stop. You'll get into your the free agency news, and then the Blitz will be here before we know it, straight after the Olympics in September as well. So already can't wait. Congratulations again to the Tassie Jack Jumpers. Just an unbelievable championship series. The podcast is going to keep on rolling. It might not be weekly, though. So as we say every time we get on this show, make sure you turn the notifications on, subscribe to all those great things, because there's going to be plenty of basketball. Aussies getting it done in the NBA as the postseason's not too far away there. And then we are on the road to Paris. So there's going to be plenty of podcasts still to come. There'll be interviews, all those types of things that we always do here. We appreciate the support right through the NBL season. We appreciate the feedback at times when things, you know, were said on this podcast, mostly from Olgan, that you didn't like. But we appreciate the support. It's been another fun year of NBL. Olgs, even when we were separated by a big ocean, we found a way to get this done. I appreciate you, my friend.
I appreciate you too. And congratulations on being on the Tassie bandwagon from day one. May you spend the entire offseason gloating until we have a new champion.
Can't believe it. Didn't even get a text from anyone from the Jack Jumpers organization thanking me for my support, unwavering support. This team lost 6 of 8 games at one point, and I said I am not at all wavering. This team is good.
I tried to throw cynicism into your way, and you were unwavering, so credit to you.
No, credit to the Jack Jumpers. Credit to you, Olgan. Credit to all our listeners for joining us right throughout the season. As I said, we'll be back. Not necessarily sure it'll be definitely next week, but we won't be too far away. Keep it locked on ESPN.com.au for all your news. ESPN on the TV for all the ridiculous amounts of basketball we've got coming off on the next few weeks. For Olgan Ullich, Kane Pittman, this has been a great NBL season. We'll speak to you very soon.